That's Pick It on Johnny Cash, an Ultimate Bluegrass tribute. It's an album, and we'll be playing clips from it this morning as part of our music, our Billboard music. So thank you very much for being with us on this Monday morning. It's the 28th of January, 14 minutes past the hour of 9 o'clock. Let me introduce our panel to you, and then we'll get started. We have a lot to talk about. Some exciting news regarding the Lockbox 2, so we'll get to that, and we'll make sure that we leave plenty of time to talk about other stuff, you know, like what's been happening over the last 3 or 4 days. Libby Post is with us. She is a political consultant and a regular in our program. We're thrilled that she's here. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good to see you
as always.
Thank you.
Barry Lewis made it up the Thruway. He is executive editor of the Times Herald Record and a Monday regular for us. And we're, it's Monday, and we thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good to see you. How's everything?
Glad to be here. It was just, there was an accident on I-90 westbound. Heading towards Buffalo. Well, I don't think it was as far as Buffalo, but and if you're not familiar like I am with Albany and downtown and trying to get around, I'm sure there were about half a dozen shortcuts I could have taken. I should have called in and said, help.
Waze.
You know, we're so flattered to have your newspaper represented on this panel. It is so important to us.
I appreciate that.
You know, Middletown and the entire Hudson Valley, so important to us.
It's an amazingly growing area.
We get the newspaper, and we get you, which is even fun. Sarah Rogerson is with us. She's Albany Law School professor who directs the Immigration Law Clinic. And Sarah, good morning. How are you?
Happy Monday.
Happy Monday to you. Very nice to have you on the program. And Alan Shartok is here, and we've got exciting news regarding the Lockbox. Very, very exciting stuff. So we have a lot of work to do, and we're going to work on that this week. And so, Alan, the goal all along was to get to halfway in the Lockbox. You will remember our goal is $1 million. The goal, our immediate goal, before the fund drive begins on February 11th at 6 a.m., was to get to halfway, so $500,000 in the Lockbox. Alan, where are we?
Well, we're close, Joe. We're at 459. In other words, 460. We've got about $40,000 to go.
Correct.
We can do that. If we do it fast and people want the hat and the gloves. Look at these gloves, folks. Aren't they something?
They are beautiful.
Gorgeous.
Beautiful.
So, I like the clips.
Yeah. The clips at the end so that you can either clip them together or you could clip them to something else so that you don't lose them like I lose mine. I've been doing something a little bit strange these days. I was introduced to the hot hands. I put hot hands
in my
gloves. They're very good. And I walk 4 miles. They stay with me, and I have a different pair of hot foots in my feet, and you know I'm doing pretty good with all that. Do you care? No.
No, when you said you were going to, it was unusual. I thought it was going to be weirder than that.
Okay. So anyway, we are at 460. We need $40,000. That means we need 400 people right now who will get on a phone and say, "We'll make you whole," because it's getting a little too close for me now. I'm getting a little worried, so let's everybody get going. It's our station. We all made it. Everywhere I go, people are talking about this panel, and well, they should, because we have a very distinguished group of people here.
And now we have a fine person who has decided to be anonymous, and that's fine. That is certainly allowed. But it said, hey, if you can do it by 10:30 on Friday morning, we'll give you how much, Alan?
We'll give you $5,000. And that's a great deal of money. This is a person from Rexford, where, as you know, everybody's a king. I can't use his name because he wants to be anonymous.
Going to say, do we know if it's a king or a queen?
No,
I don't even know that.
It's very complicated.
Okay.
So,
they, them, theirs.
All right, go ahead.
No, I believe it's a king in this case. We are really hoping that we can do this because it's so important. Now, wouldn't it be great if we could go in with $600,000 for the first time?
Can you imagine?
For the first time ever? And then we would only have $400,000 to go in the drive. We could wrap that up in a day.
Right. Well, we're trying to get the $500,000.
We are, and that's thanks to that correction. You're right. We don't want to advance this at all.
Yeah. But $500,000, my God. 1-800-323-9262. Operators are standing by.
Lewis Aluminum.
1-800-323-9262, or you can go online and do it.
Yes, you can go online at wamc.org. Again, let me give that to you a little bit slower. wamc.org, a well-known place that we all go to have our coffee and drink our seltzer, which reminds me, I didn't bring my seltzer in. Perhaps somebody's hearing.
Do you carry the seltzer bottle, either the blue or the green one with the spritzer?
So you can push, okay. But in my home,
2 cents
at 50 West 96th Street, where I grew up, the guy came with a thing, and my twin brother Lewis and I would chase around, would each grab a seltzer bottle, and chase each other around the house.
With the delivery of Hoffman's soda.
Hoffman's. Actually, this was just the blue bottles with the spritzer on them. Hoffman's, where everybody goes to university to know when you should be thirsty. Drink Hoffman's, drink Hoffman's. Hoffman's is the finest when you're thirsty.
That corporate sponsor will
we know. Oh, and look, the Hoffman's have arrived. Right. Look at that. Thank you, Dina.
It's Hoffman's. Right. It's, took over.
Boy, if I knew it was that simple, I would have asked for something really extravagant.
I know. Egg creams at 9:30.
Yeah.
All right. So 1-800-323-9262 or WAMC.org. $5,000, and we need $40,000 to get us to halfway point on the drive. So please do whatever you can do, and we can do it this morning. We can absolutely do it this morning. So there you go.
You're right.
As always. 1-800-323-9262. Okay. We got everything out of the way then. We can start as far as what's going for. Oh, by the way, we have the governor coming on this morning at 10:05. So, panel, we're going to be kicking you out at 10. But
there are worse things.
But yes. Yeah. It works for you. Okay. So, that's just a way of saying we have a lot of stuff to get to in a little bit abbreviated time. So let's do that right now. Oh, my goodness. You know, we went off the air on Friday, and we were talking about when was the shutdown going to end, and we don't know, and it's going to go on forever, and look at the planes are stopped, and LaGuardia, and then a few hours later, the shutdown was over.
You know what did it, Joe? That incredible picture they kept putting on CNN of how many planes were up in the air in America. Yeah. You couldn't see the ground. They were just, it was so frightening. I think Mitch McConnell made a telephone call to the president. That's what we're hearing. And said, my guys are in revolution. My Republicans are in revolution. You got to end this thing. And so they ended it. Right. But of course, the big person went up there and said it's all his great victory that he's won here.
It's
which
just,
of course he did.
He's the only person who actually thinks that he won in this. I don't think you find any other Republicans across the country who think that somehow this was his victory.
That was one of the strangest. I'm not going to say the strangest because
Hannity.
Well, the last 2 years, but the press conference in the Rose Garden was not a press conference. It was just an announcement. He had all the administration officials not behind him, but as the audience, so they were never seen.
But they were heard. They were there.
They were applauding. And for what? I mean, what did he get? What did he get?
Nothing.
And by the way, what did we get other than a 3 week reprieve, mm-hmm. which in light of what the quote unquote deal was. We didn't really need to do it all. That was the original deal.
By the way, is there anybody in this room who thinks that he's going to go back into that mire pit again in 3 weeks?
No.
But I also do not think he's going to. I think he has set it up now where he's going to feel so much heat from the Ann Coulters of the world, which he is already doing. And I would not be shocked if he just says there's going to be a national crisis, national emergency.
I know this is a dumb question, but why do we care about her again?
Well, we don't.
No, he cares about her.
But why?
Because of his base. She is a whistler for the base.
Yep. And has been for a very long time. I mean, she's had a long career with that base.
Yeah.
I mean, she happened to have been scheduled for Bill Maher It just so happened to have been scheduled for this Friday. And so the timing could not have been any more perfect for her to go out there on Friday evening on live and say that not only is he a wimp, but he is disgraceful, and really ripped into him on national television, on a show that obviously draws a lot more liberal viewers, but took no prisoners.
And by the way, Hannity is all for him, said it was a big victory for the president, as I remember his words, and just couldn't get off the dime.
I think that everyone in the administration knows that they lost this, but it's his way of saying, I won, is to go out there, whether or not it's true, to say, I won. And that's it. And look what I did for the American people. I reopened the government because I have the power to close it, so now I can reopen it.
And that's the administration's job, is to clap.
Right.
That's
right.
It.
That's
and
it.
If you
that's
don't
it.
Clap,
to make him feel good,
you get fired.
Right.
I mean, there's no
that's
way
it.
The Democrats are going to. The money is not the issue. There is money that will be allocated. So I don't think it's that. It's going to be the wording. There's no way that Nancy Pelosi is going to have any wording that's going to say wall. And I don't think there's any way that he's going to accept any deal in which the wording does not say wall.
But he has already started to change his rhetoric.
Right.
He started the other day. He talked about, well, it could be a wall. It could be this. It could be that. It could be, 21st century. I mean, he...
A smart wall.
A
which
smart
could be no wall,
wall
at
right,
all.
Right. Right. So he's starting to realize if he wants to get anything that he has to change his tune a little bit. But, well, who knows? What's the most amazing part about this is that for the misogynist in chief, he was brought down
by a woman.
And it's great to watch because he does not know how to deal with her because she's smarter than he is. She knows the process better than he does. And she can get things done better than he can.
And
so
she knows
great.
What's in her hand.
Yeah, she certainly
she
does.
She knows what's in her hand. She's not bluffing him.
Nope.
She knows what she can do.
What was so frustrating, though, is you saw these, through all this, and because there really aren't any winners. I think some people maybe made out better. But you see these... federal workers and a woman on television, 35 years working, and breaks down and cries because she's on a food line. These are incredibly proud. We had pictures of we went to a Hudson Valley Food Bank was distributing food last week, and a correction officer who's a federal correction officer at Otisville was with his son, and taking him to a food bank so they can get some food because he hasn't gotten paid, but he's got to go to work. And I can't imagine the embarrassment of this dad's face, as he's dealing with his son, who, as at some point, they must be wondering, why aren't we paying for all this? Mm-hmm. These are proud people, and they have just gone through hell in these last couple of weeks for no reason.
And this administration doesn't understand. Look at what Wilbur Ross said. He was like, well, they could just take out a loan. They don't. These people, that's ridiculous.
No
they
empathy.
Could just take it. There's no empathy. They don't understand real people's lives. They think everybody's like them. There was a great skit on Saturday Night Live where Kate McKinnon played Wilbur Ross, and he was like, well, they could just, rent out their yacht and make some money that way. It's just, they have no idea what it's like to live in the real world.
It is all very, I think those stories have been around, obviously, for the 36 days of the shutdown. But we had talked on this program for a long time that it would be something that affected people directly, a lot of people. And when you start showing, as Alan indicated, the planes, the airports, flights were delayed. And you had Philadelphia, New York, Newark, Reagan. And then all of a sudden, finger snapped and everything is taken
care of.
Yeah,
we didn't even realize. This is one of those things where you realize the tentacles of the federal government. There were agencies that, didn't even know, were that tied into it. Obviously, FDA and FAA. But, apparently 1 in 5 were directly or indirectly affected by the shutdown, which is a huge number.
And once you start talking about LaGuardia closing, I think that was what did it. Because this shutdown cost us more than the wall would have cost. That's number one. But you, as Alan said before, you're talking about people's lives. All we needed was one plane crash.
Right.
And that would have been it for his presidency forever.
And he knew it.
Yep. Yep. That would have been it for his presidency.
It's sort of classic that he would claim victory over what was really a workers' victory.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's sort of poetic in a really sad way that, of course, it was the men and women who work for the TSA and in the FAA and with the unions that really made the government reopen.
And how shallow must you be to ask your administration, people who are working at the White House, to go outside so when he walks out into the Rose Garden, they are applauding? Right. What they are applauding, I don't know. But if you watch that scene and you listen to that, I'm thinking, well, who's applauding? This is a press. If this is a press conference, obviously it wouldn't be the press, but it was not. And it's set up so that he would come out looking somehow like a victor.
The other thing, too, that was weird about that was the decision to have that be public and then have the signing not be public. And meaning that they weren't going to let any cameras in to show the signing of the bill. It seems that strategy should have gone through or would have gone through the whole process. We made it. And I guess I understand that he wasn't going to allow Nancy Pelosi to make that announcement, but still.
No. He's about optics.
Yeah.
You know, and what's amazingly for a guy who is Mr. PR in so many ways, he blew this one really badly.
Well, you mean in terms of the process of
I think how he, you know, from
20 seconds
from the point in which he had to pull away from the State of the Union until this, he did not read the tea leaves well. And he obviously was not either. He was advised wrongly or he once again failed to listen to his advisors.
Panel at WAMC.org to write to us and to be part of the conversation. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Sarah Rogerson, Barry Lewis, and Libby Post. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We are making a lockbox push, and we now have about $39,500 to go. To make this challenge, which was just announced about 25 minutes ago.
How much is that again? That's a lot of money.
$5,000. $5,000.
Think of it, Joe.
From Anonymous in Rexford. Yep.
You try to put $5,000 in 20 in your wallet. You can't do it.
No, you can't.
Won't fit.
Can't do it. That's a lot of money.
Not and that I have ever had the opportunity to try, but I don't think it would fit.
No, you can't do it. and it's a great deal of money for one individual to give because he loves his public radio station.
Now, but you think, and we had, so already we've done a couple thousand this morning. And
really?
If we keep doing that, well, my goodness, this can be, we can get this easily and move on and be in very good shape. And let's not forget, every dollar that we make now is money we don't have to make during the fund drive.
So don't be calling us up during the fund drive and saying, why are you taking so much time?
That's right. With all that is happening in the world and with all that is going on, you would think you would want it uninterrupted. We could get this done, you know, and we still have until February 11th.
Yeah.
WAMC.org, WAMC.org, 1-800-323-9262 is the telephone number, 1-800-323-9262. And the 9262 is WAMC if you have one of those phones that have letters under it.
Oh,
I'm gonna bet we can't make it to what, Joe? I can't.
Say that again.
Just give me one word and I'll help. I promise.
No.
Sounds like
I'm trying to think of you Joe like, and I know each other well enough.
You want to so do you, to like you? So yeah. You bet well, you, we can't
bet.
Get to 470.
Yeah, if 470 and if
smooth as a baby's tushy.
And if I'll buy you one of those terrible things you have your hand on, and you'll buy me a polar seltzer.
Deal.
Okay.
All right. And that's $10,000 in the next.
I'll win.
Yeah. Are you gonna pitch with the governor?
No.
Okay.
No.
So, okay. Then I think I think you are gonna win.
Next.
So okay. how much do we need to get to 470?
We need $9,775.
Now, one person with $9,775. And look, somebody's here giving us five if we can make it. Is it worth $3 a day? Think about that. How much is the New York Times these days? It's a lot of money, isn't it?
A lot of money.
New York Times is a lot. The Sunday Times is, I keep on forgetting
what. $6?
Yeah, I think. Yeah,
up here.
I subscribe to the app, so I don't even know.
Well, I do. I do too, but I like to have the ads.
The print.
Yeah. So, well, whatever.
There are some who
to
still
Alan's
like
point.
The point is, in their hands.
I think we can't do it. I just think we can't do it. And you say?
I say we can, although I would feel better if, you know, like if the governor was pitching with you, then I think we'd have a better chance.
So Alan,
but I think we can do it.
Alan, you've dropped down the gauntlet to the listeners. You're saying you don't think that they will respond.
No, I don't.
which is going to rile them up on a Monday, and they'll say, we'll show him.
Yeah.
All right. So let's go to some letters, and that'll give you plenty of time to go to your computer and you know, take care of business here.
At WAMC.org.
Or 1-800-323-9262. All right, sir.
Okay, I can't wait for that next bottle of seltzer. Okay, so Barbara says, wall. As much as I agree that Trump's wall is immoral, I would not mind seeing the Democrats compromise on this limited way. Agreed to repair and strengthen any segments of existing, in capital letters, fencing or barriers that are in need of repair and fortification, and not an inch of new barrier, but in the spirit of compromise to get the government stabilized, agree to fortify any existing structures that need it. I don't think that's a good idea, Barbara. I'm going to tell you why. When you give in to this guy, he's going to use this tool from now on. Now, it's a compromise, all right, but I don't think you should even entertain a compromise. That's what Nancy Pelosi, my leader, who I agree with on this, says, and I think she's right. Why compromise with him? Jamie says, questioning Republicans. I'm having a hard time listening to a highly intelligent Republican congressional members toe the Trump mantra as if they believe a word of what they say. What is wrong with journalists who seem incapable of asking a follow-up question or just to say, you know, that's a lie. Why are you saying it?
I think the journalists are asking the follow-up questions. No, it's just like you can't force the words out of somebody's mouth.
Or as Christopher Cuomo said just the other day, yes, you did.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And so what you can do at best is you can pull back the quotes that they said in the past and play those.
Confront them with them.
Exactly.
And think right now, too, it's not about supporting Trump. It's about maintaining power.
Yep.
It's power in politics, and it makes people do really unfortunate things, and that is definitely on display.
Right. That was the name of my graduate course, you know.
Definitely on display?
Yeah, I took that.
What was the name of the graduate course?
They're looking at 2020 primary, and even McConnell, and they are fearful, not from 2020 for him, but they are fearful that there's going to be the alt-right's who would primary anybody who is not going to support Trump.
Well, that's right. That's right. They're damned if they do and damned if
they don't. So they are party first, not country first.
Now, they sit around, they talk to each other, they murmur under their hands, they even tell the Democrats, this guy's nuts.
Yeah.
And yet, they don't dare do what will get them in the history books, which is to be a profiling coach.
Everybody in his cabinet has said he's nuts.
Yeah.
You know, the most respected people who have now left his cabinet have said he is nuts.
But now we shouldn't just count on the journalists. We need the Democrats to hold the Republicans' feet to the fire like they did on the Senate floor last week. It was the senator from Colorado, I believe, who took Ted Cruz to task over his disingenuous support of the wall. And it framed as a public safety issue, which we talked about last week in terms of the Coast Guard, and called Ted Cruz's words crocodile tears and lit into him on the Senate floor. Yeah. We need more of that.
Yeah,
that's good stuff.
And I think you're going to see more of it because you've got this whole new crop of left of center Dems. And so the ones who are there and have been there for a while, they need to start moving a little bit further to the left
well,
in
are,
order to fend off their own primary.
Absolutely. Now, and they got two problems. They got primary problems, but then they got general election problems. And if they're in a purple district, which we saw, I mean, how nearsighted or farsighted do you have to be to take a look at what happened in the House of Representatives?
That's right.
It's going to be them the
next
time. And
you're going to see, though, but unfortunately, though, this makes for even greater gridlock because now you have, right, you have more left-leaning Democrats who have come into Congress, and the folks who have left were the more moderate Republicans. And so you're going to have even greater diversity on both ends.
And what about that 60 Minutes last night?
Yes.
I don't know about you guys, but I'm not going to be drinking a certain kind of coffee for a while.
We'll
get to that one.
I don't drink coffee.
So actually, we'll get to it now because we only have about 15 minutes. But so Howard Schultz announced on 60 Minutes last night, we expected that he was going to run for president, and I think most people expected that he was going to run on the Democratic line. He announced last night that he was going to run as an independent. Scott Pelley obviously asked him the question, aren't you worried that you're going to siphon away votes from a Democratic candidate, especially given the amount of money that you have to run a race and ensure re-election of the president? He said that he didn't see that as an issue, but it certainly seems like an issue.
Well, especially if he runs as a Libertarian, I feel like this is maybe one of the first times that the independent candidate wouldn't just draw from the left, but could also draw a substantial group from the right, depending on what his platform is.
Yeah, but he didn't say he was going to run as a Libertarian last night.
No, independent, but yeah, that's,
but,
you know.
Yeah, he's more like Perot.
But this guy is
thing.
A Democrat. I mean, this guy is a Democrat.
Yeah,
this guy
a Democrat.
has been very supportive of Democrats.
But like other many people who, with that kind of money, he's sort of divorced from political reality. You know,
that's
what he
fair.
Was saying is just sort of on par with what Wilbur Ross was saying. He doesn't understand the reality of politics. And it's too bad. I love his politics, and Lynn loves his coffee. But, you know, we can't afford to have something like this at this point.
I would be surprised if he what he said last night was he was thinking about it, which, of course, certainly means that you're leaning. But I would not be surprised that the backlash, which maybe he wasn't expecting to be as great, particularly from strong Democratic folks throughout the country, is going to persuade him to maybe see this not as the right move, and that I think they'll convince him that he would do more harm than good.
I have a lot of faith in the electorate. I think that they're going to know.
That's unfortunate. I'm just kidding.
I have a lot of faith in the electorate. I think that this guy, Trump, is perceived as being such a difficult guy, and his policies are so awful that I think people are not going to fool around with that. I think when they see what the stakes are in this, they will eschew him right up.
Alan, there's no way you would have thought that he would have won to begin with. Did you really think that he was going to beat Hillary Clinton?
No.
Okay, so that's why I think everything's off the table. And he didn't. Well, except he's in the office and she's in Westchester County.
Well, she announced last night or yesterday that she's still thinking about it.
She's thinking about what?
Running for president.
Running for what?
President.
Of what?
The United States.
I don't think so.
Well, that's what she said.
That's what she
said. Well, obviously, she woke up 3 in the morning.
She's leaving the door open.
She's leaving the door open so Bill can walk through it. No, she is not running for president.
Do you have a seat on your editorial board?
Yes.
Good.
She's not running for president. I don't think they would. The party will not. There is nothing. There is nothing there. I don't know why she does it. Nobody wants her to run for president.
I don't think that's right.
I don't think that's right either.
Are there really Democrats who want her to run for president?
The answer is a lot of people who thought she was screwed out of the election.
Well, okay, she got screwed, but that's not a reason for her to. I mean, there are a lot of strong women, men, minority candidates, and she would be among the weaker ones right now.
Well, pivoting back to this potential independent run, I mean, I wonder if there's a way for the Democrats to use that in a different way, but the way that Trump used the independent candidate the last go around. Like, isn't there a way to work that, depending on the platform that this guy comes up with? And he's been a Democrat.
He is a Democrat.
His ideals have been aligned with the Democrats in the past. But maybe there's it doesn't really matter what the presidential candidate honestly believes and has said in the past. All that matters is what they say from the announcement of their candidacy going forward.
I was listening carefully, meaning one foot in the kitchen trying to get a tangerine, and I thought I heard him say that he was against basically Medicare for all.
Yes, he is.
He doesn't feel that
extraordinary,
or free college tuition, or any of those things.
One of the richest men in the world referred to it as those people in their free ride.
Right.
Free
right.
ride.
Well, yeah. Trump's already gone after him. He tweeted this morning that Schultz, quote, doesn't have the guts to run for president.
If you don't think he could make an impact, just pull out the Ross Perot tapes.
Right.
And ask anybody in the Bush family if they think that Dad would have won again if it wasn't for Ross.
He would have won.
So, you know, and that's probably the closest we've ever come to an independent really making an inroads in this. An independent's not going to win, but without question, an independent person can on either side pull away numbers.
Right. All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll finish up with the letters, and then we'll just have a few minutes before the governor joins Alan a little bit after 10. We'll be right back after this. (1-800-323-9262) to get in on the lockbox, WAMC.org, WAMC.org. And we have a $5,000 challenge to get to.
Did you say $5,000?
$5,000 Anonymous and Rex.
I have a. We had to get to one set to what it was. What
oh, we were going to try to get to 170, and to
I said you couldn't do it, and you said you could, and you I said I'd buy you one of those things.
It was Diet Pepsi. Man.
Yeah, and you said you would buy me a seltzer.
That's right. I think I'll be buying you a seltzer, Alan.
I hope so.
But we need $9,200, and that could still happen in the next 40 minutes. Who knows? So we leave you with that, and we'll go back to letters.
Okay, Joe. Kevin says, Howard Schultz, good morning. Please tell me Howard Schultz is not serious about running on an independent ticket. This would help Trump greatly in getting reelected. And that's Kevin from Melrose 5-5300. And Christopher, embarrassing? Dear panel, people go to food pantries all the time. People need food stamps all the time. Why is it embarrassing for government workers but not for others to receive this help? Let's not mischaracterize or stigmatize the act of receiving help when someone needs it. Thank you. And that's Christopher from Hillsdale. I know the guy.
Yeah, Christopher, you're absolutely right. My parents, when they had me, my dad was still in the seminary and my mom was in nursing school. And so I often benefited from clothing programs, clothing sharing, food pantries that they had available on campus. That was back in the 70s. And so I'm with you. We should definitely talk more about it because it's more common than people realize.
Well, maybe the spirit is changing, to be fair. I have to say that I was driving down Route 7 outside of my home in Great Barrington, and I saw this huge group of people outside the Goodwill. But it turned out it was the pot shop next door.
Well, I just want to put in a little plug.
Well, there's that, isn't there?
You know, there's a lot of humane societies and shelters across the state, and I think now the nation, who have food pantries for cat and dog food. And
yes.
I know Mohawk Hudson put it out on Facebook saying if people who worked for the federal government and weren't getting paid needed pet food, just come on down. You know, and that's the kind of stuff. I mean, there was a guy from Knox, I think, who talked to lots of local farmers and brought food over to the airport for the TSA agents. I mean, and it's those kinds of folks that understand what's going on here, and they will look in 2020 to see whether or not the person they're voting for is going to do this again to
or
federal
workers. Taking money.
Right.
All right, we have 6 minutes.
Okay, here we go. Okay. Janine says, shut down. It is egregious that our elected officials continue to collect their paychecks during government shutdowns. Please correct me if I'm wrong. If I'm correct, how do we, the people who elected these individuals to represent us, effectively prevent their paychecks when they are shutting down the government of the people for the people? Thank you. Have a great day, Janine. You know, Janine, several of the people I interview on the Congressional Corner virtually every day have announced I believe Sean Patrick Maloney.
Yeah, we ask all our candidate, all our representatives in our area if they were going to accept, and most of them say no.
Yeah, that they're not taking it. Yeah. Mike says, Howard Schultz for president. 60 Minutes interview Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz, who announced he is considering a run for president as an independent. I am extremely skeptical of a candidate running as an independent under the current electoral process. Historically, only one candidate has come to close to winning as an independent. Theodore Roosevelt finished second to Woodrow Wilson in 1912, running on the Bull Moose Party. William Taft, the Republican, finished third. Until we get rid of the Electoral College, a third-party candidate is just whistling in the wind, and that's Mike from Glen, or otherwise known as Glens Falls. Okay.
I thought he had an interesting take on that, because he's basically saying that all the rules, the reason he could do it, because Scott Pelley said that to him, look, nobody has ever done this before. And he said, well, all the political rules seem to be out the window, so why can't we do this? Then what's your message? Well, I want to bring all the political norms back to where
he could do it. And he also made a point. He said something about the fact that we have a president who was not qualified. And, I think a reasonable person can say, well, what would be the difference between you and Trump in terms of your qualifications?
Oh, that's fair. But I also think that we shouldn't fear more voices in the room. That's all I'm going to say. I think it pushes all of the candidates to hone their message, try harder, and be smarter.
Okay.
That's my Pollyanna view for a Monday morning.
And Chuck says, Trump isn't to blame for the shutdown. Well, the narrative on the shutdown is that Trump wouldn't sign a spending bill, so the government shutdown. The responsibility ultimately lies with the GOP Senate. They could have passed it anyways with a veto-proof majority and pushback, saying that the shutdown is never acceptable. They indulged his impulses and allowed this to happen. So while Trump seeded the idea of wanting a shutdown, it happened because the GOP Senate allowed it, not the president. Chuck from Albany. Hey, Chuck. There's enough to go around for everybody here.
And by the way, Chuck, it was Donald Trump who proudly said in the Oval Office, it's my shutdown.
Yeah, he did.
I'll take credit for
it. That's right.
Okay. And Julie says, border fence built since 2006 actually had negative benefits overall. Why is there not more attention on the Stanford-Dartmouth study, pointing out the existing fencing cost $7 per taxpayer but didn't significantly curtail migration? And despite what Ann Coulter has been saying, the research showed that the fencing actually cost American workers, and it goes on, but that's where we'll stop. And then Holly says, from Charlemagne, dear panel, all the media crowing about how Mr. Trump caved in on Thursday and Friday, will please remember the State of the Union address argument with Speaker Pelosi. By opening the government, he now gets his speech in the joint session. All those cameras, ovations, all the grandstanding and glad handing, he got exactly what he wanted there. Okay, and then...
But he could have had that without the shutdown.
Yeah.
He would have had it.
He could have gone
regardless.
To a rally.
I was wondering how ugly he was going to be in the State of the State.
What do you mean?
And whether or not... Well, if he's going to publicly attack the Democrats in a way where they'll get up and walk out.
That would be awesome.
Wouldn't it?
Yeah. I don't think that's
I wasn't going to watch until you brought that up.
I don't think that's going to happen.
I actually had a dream about that.
Did you?
Yeah, well, because there was one point where Nancy,
were you one of the Democrats that got up
and walked absolutely. But Nancy Pelosi was saying, they said, well, what if he shows up to deliver the State of the Union and you haven't allowed him? She said, well, he'll have to deliver it on the steps.
That is great.
And John says, speaking of Pelosi, I think Nancy Pelosi is a hero who has led the Democrats in Congress to in a united stand for what is right. She triumphed over the negativism she faced, and under her leadership, the Democrats for once did not shoot themselves in the foot. John from Slingerlands in Brandon says, Nancy Pelosi. I agree with the panel that Nancy Pelosi is much smarter than the president. Trump, who is also wondering, since she has been in Congress for as long as she has, why doesn't she just run for president of the United States in 2020?
She has more power now. But isn't it amazing? 2 months ago, Nancy Pelosi couldn't get elected, couldn't be dog catcher in Congress, and now she is the hero.
Right.
Yeah, I wonder where all of those people. Reminds me a little bit after Robert Kennedy was assassinated, and there were these Robert Kennedy guys in Congress who were trying to stand on his shoulders. Boy, they were very embarrassed. And I suspect that the same thing is happening here with Pelosi. I think they're all hiding under a bushel basket.
That's mm-hmm. why. Give credit to Roger Stone. He's still the only person who still believes that Richard Nixon did nothing wrong. So
why aren't you saying the same thing about Bernie? You're saying that no one wants Hillary to run, but what about Bernie? He just announced he's considering running.
Yeah, we don't want him to run.
Exactly.
Okay. And
all right. 5 seconds.
Roseanne, Trump in 2020. Trump won't make the 2020 election. If Mueller's investigation doesn't get him impeached, there will be enough candidates running against him in September. Trump would not win against Flake in the Republican Party.
Welcome back to the roundtable. 1 minute past 10 o'clock, and a pleasure, as always, to welcome the governor of New York State, Andrew Cuomo, to the program to talk to Dr. Alan Chartok. Good morning, Governor. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning.
Good morning. What is all this doctor stuff? I don't get that stuff.
You operate on people.
I like it. I really like it. Okay. Respectfully, sir, you should talk. Okay.
Yeah, but you use no anesthesia.
Hey, how are things going between the Democrats in the Assembly and the Senate? There are those people who think that the teachers' union in the Assembly won't allow you to put your tax cap, on real estate and the rest of it, the 2%. So what's going on there? Are the Senate and Assembly beginning to fight now?
It's a good question. Hence, you operate without anesthesia. He really cut to the bone on that one. The Senate passed a One House bill on the making the property tax cap permanent. The Assembly did not pass it. In this new dynamic, it has been read the way you suggest. In the old days, a One House bill meant, well, I'm doing everything I can do to get it passed. Now, a One House bill almost says the opposite, right? Because if you don't have an agreement with the Assembly, then you have nothing, and you should be able to strike an agreement with the Assembly because you just went through passing all these leftover bills where you agreed on 100 things. At the end of the day, the property tax cap is probably the most politically potent issue. People care about it. It matters. It matters on Long Island. It matters upstate, especially with the new SALT federal provision. Teachers union is against it. The Assembly stopped it. The Assembly doesn't have a property tax cap in New York City, so they weren't doing it for their constituents in New York City. If not their constituents, then who? I'm sure the teachers union isn't pleased with it.
But on Long Island, you got a whole bunch of new Long Island. Let's face facts here, Governor. You have a whole bunch of new Democrats who need to be protected by the Senate. So if you don't pass it and the Assembly doesn't go along with it, they put these folks in Long Island and newly elected senators in danger.
Oh, yeah. No, if they don't pass it, and I think that's what caused the kerfuffle about the Senate allowing the Assembly distance on the tax cap. If you don't pass it, those Long Island seats, Westchester, upstate pays a higher property tax by percentage of home value than downstate. Everyone outside of New York City gets hurt. There's no doubt about that.
Okay, so let's talk about the Child Victims Act, which has now passed to great acclaim. There are hints, not such big little hints, in the Daily News and other places that you're being attacked by the church. They've got bishops coming out saying, you know, you should be excommunicated and all the rest.
Yeah. Bishops attacking Governor Cuomo. Let's pull that headline up from about 30 years ago. The Child Victims Act should pass today. I just met with the victims. I feel so good about this, doctor, because this is just a pure act of justice. And these were people who were abused by the authorities, and then the authorities denied it, which aggravated the abuse. And they've been fighting for years. This whole agenda, by the way, all of these bills that you're seeing in these early weeks, they're all the same. These are socially progressive bills that the conservatives in the Senate wouldn't pass. Reproductive Health Act, the DREAM Act, the gun bill that's going to be done tomorrow, the gun safety bill, Child Victims Act. They were all socially progressive, stopped by the conservatives in the Republican Senate, and everybody else had agreed to them. That's why you see now this flood of bills coming down, criminal justice reform, because everybody had agreed to them. But the Child Victims Act was long overdue. Pope Francis, I quoted at the State of the State, and he said clearly that the church should not protect these priests. The priests should be punished. Pope Francis said these people should have access to the courts for legal resolution. So I'll stand with the Pope on this one. I think the bishops have worked to protect the church over doing justice. Now, I think they compounded the problem by covering it up and not taking responsibility.
And then, of course, there's the codification of Roe v. Wade, which has really got them angry.
Yes. But look, that's why what you see in New York is the inverse of what Washington is doing on all these issues.
Sure.
They want to roll back Roe v. Wade. They want to go back before Roe v. Wade. We're saying no. We are going to incorporate Roe v. Wade into our laws, and I'd like to incorporate it into the Constitution. The Catholic Church does not believe in a woman's right to choose. Yes, I understand their religious view. I understand their religious view when it comes to marriage equality. But I'm not here to legislate religion. I'm not I happen to be Catholic, but you're not a Catholic governor or a Jewish governor or a Muslim governor. You're just governor. And you can have religious views, but different legal civil views. And that was my father with abortion. That was my father at Notre Dame. That's St. Thomas More, whose portrait hangs above my desk, which was a gift from my father. Mm-hmm. I'm here to represent all the people and the constitutional rights and privileges and limitations for all the people, not as a Catholic.
Talk to me about gun control, Governor, while I have you. You have this red flag bill. What is a red flag?
Red flag bill is building on what we did with the SAFE Act, which was the smartest, best thing I have done. And in my eulogy, I hope it's in the first paragraph, we passed the SAFE Act after the Sandy Hook massacre in Connecticut. Everybody said it was an overreaction. This is a once-in-a-lifetime Sandy Hook massacre. Yes, sure, once-in-a-lifetime. Since then, we've had more mass shootings, more killings. It's only gotten worse. And the red flag bill goes the next step, which is how long a person has to wait before they can buy a gun or before they are cleared on the background check. It's now 3 days. There was a proposal to increase it to 10 days. Some states have 30 days, which is appealing to me. The red flag bill says if a teacher or a family member believes that a person may have mental health issues and may be a threat to themselves or others and has guns, they can go to a priest. If you hear the interviews of the teachers in many of these school shootings, they will all say, well, we thought the student was troubled, but we had no recourse. This would give them recourse. And it would ban bump stocks, which are not really used by legitimate sportsmen. They just allow the gun to fire almost without aiming multiple times.
Let me continue with gun control, for a moment. Is what you are suggesting constitutional? Don't you think the people who have just been appointed to the Supreme Court, obviously with a litmus test, are going to say, no, you can't do that?
I think you'll see this Supreme Court challenging everything. They'll challenge the New York City bill. I wouldn't be surprised if they challenge the SAFE Act bill here in New York. I think they'll challenge everything. Their argument is going to be absolute Second Amendment. And everything is an abridgment and violation of the Second Amendment. That's why I said all of these bills, we are the inverse of where Washington is. They are going extreme conservative, and we are going progressive. whether it's reproductive health, where they want Roe v. Wade, Dream Act, where they want a border wall, gun safety, where they want strict Second Amendment. It's the same all across the board. Voting rights, where they want and have been pursuing voter disenfranchisement. So we are the antithesis, which I love, because it offers New York as the progressive alternative to what's happening in Washington, which is New York at its best, Alan. That's New York leadership as the progressive capital, as the spire reaching up, right?
Well, no, I agree with you. Of course I agree with you. But the question is, once it gets to the Supreme Court and they tell you, no, you're wrong, you can't do it, a lot of this stuff, don't you look foolish?
Well, I don't think even if we lost, I would look foolish. They challenged the SAFE Act and we won. They can challenge this. I don't think they win. It has due process in it, but it is the right position. And if you want to say, by the way, how would I ever be embarrassed by, let's say it got to the Supreme Court and Trump's packed Supreme Court that had a litmus test for conservative judges disagreed with me. Is that, do I look stupid or is that a badge of honor?
I take it that's a rhetorical question?
Yes. But so, if you want to answer it, by all means.
No, you won't look stupid. I think I knew that before I asked the question, but I did want to hear you say that.
You're testing me. So you're testing me.
Well,
you're operating
what,
on
what
me.
We college professors do, you know?
Okay.
There was a first leaders meeting of the session, and with you and Andrea Stewart Cousins and Carl Hasty last week. So how'd it go? Finally, there's a woman in the room.
Yeah, no, it's just, I've known the current Senate leader for many years. It went very well. What you're seeing here in this first phase are the in some ways are the easy bills, because we've been talking about them for years. We're all frustrated for years that they hadn't passed. They hadn't passed because of the Senate. Conservatives, I believe there are moderate Republicans who supported it. I believe they were stopped by their conservative colleagues. But all of these bills have sort of been pent up, and now the plug has been pulled from the dike, and we'll get these bills done. We'll do guns tomorrow. Hopefully we do criminal justice reform in the next couple of weeks. Then we go to the budget. The budget is going to be hard because that's government. That's not politics. And the numbers have to add up. And the revenues are slowing. I believe it's a result of the federal policy on SALT. But the revenues are slowing. I think the economy is slowing in general. Everybody has wants, and when you're in the legislature, it's very easy to say yes to everyone. Now the numbers have to add up.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be a problem. We have to pass ethics reform. That's going to be difficult.
Will
we have
they
to
do
pass
it?
Lobbying reform.
Will they do the ethics reform? I mean, I don't hear a lot of talk about it. They're all for progressive stuff in the legislature. But, you know, there's this whole matter of 15% of your income on the outside, which you've certainly spoken on. I don't hear much about that.
Yeah, that's a signal.
You don't have to be a doctor to figure that one out, right?
Yeah, that's right. When they don't talk about it, you know it's something they don't want to do. So the ethics reform, the lobbying reform, a budget, more money for everything. Yeah, but the numbers have to add up. The MTA, they're going to have to really answer. We have a pay commission that we have to do again this session. So there is, the hard issues are all ahead. There's no doubt about that.
Okay, so talk to me a little bit about, there's a measure in your budget plan which would ban the release of arrest mugshots and booking information, and the press doesn't like it. It would require amending the Freedom of Information Law. Critics say it would give police departments too much power to pick and choose which arrests are publicized and which are not. You've gotten several editorials from newspapers, not surprisingly, saying that people have a right to know. You backing off on that one?
No, but I understand the tension. and I'm open to a better solution. What's happening is private companies are taking the mugshots, they're putting them up on their website. They're then calling up the person who had the mugshot. And by the way, the case may have been dismissed or whatever. And they're saying, if you want the mugshot to be taken down, you have to pay me. So we have a clear abuse. To me, it's extortion. But they can't bring an extortion case. So how do you prevent a person from having their mugshot put up? This was brought up by our reentry council as one of the barriers to reentry. When I Google Dr. Shartok, I get a mugshot, and it looks like you were criminally penalized. It may have been you were held and released, et cetera. So how do you protect that right not to be extorted by a private company, but respect the public's right to know? And what our bill says is we leave it to the locality. You can make the decision locally. But I'm open to other suggestions.
Well, every time some county exec who has had trouble with his newspapers or somebody like that, they're going to say, okay, we're going to put a halt on this. I just am such a First Amendment fan that I think this is a, that this is a, going to a place which could really turn out to be a disaster.
No, I hear you. I hear you. I have trepidations on the bill. But how do you stop, Doctor, the these private companies that, if you want to get your picture off the website and Google, you have to pay them, and all they did was file a Freedom of Information and put up everybody's picture and see who calls to pay to take the picture down.
Well, as my son Jonas often says to me, that ain't right. Okay, so let's talk about the expansion of the Voting Rights Act last week. Obviously, the more people who vote, is that a political trick so that the Democrats, who obviously benefit when everybody gets to vote, we know that, and that's why Republicans around the country are against it. But isn't it sort of self-seeking?
It happens to be democracy.
Yes,
to the extent that they find the exercise of democracy not in their interest, that's their problem, Doctor. Right?
That, you know, I'm trying my best.
I know. I plead guilty. Voting, if people are allowed to vote, they may vote for people who represent them, and that may mean they may vote for more Democrats. Okay, so let's stop people from voting.
Well, that's exactly what happens, right?
I mean, I know
that's what happens. Why is it that Republicans feel that they're getting screwed if in fact, too many people get to vote? Do you have any sense of that?
Well, I think they think if the people who, if you make it easier to vote, so the people who tend to vote less, actually find it easier to vote and vote on a very pragmatic level that will hurt them, which I understand. But I think we're dealing with a far greater problem. You have citizen alienation. You have people who believe that government is out of touch and it's owned by the rich corporations. You're trying to get them invested and you're trying to get them to participate so they have confidence, because otherwise the system doesn't work without confidence. So I just think it was a terribly pragmatic and obnoxious point of view to try to disenfranchise voters for your own political benefit.
Now, I want to go back to the, because of my scattered mind, I want to go back to the question of gun control, and that is there's a huge push on to let teachers have come with a gun to class, and you know, if a terrible person comes in, you shoot him. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, no, I understand the conservative solution. Give everyone a gun,
sure.
And this way, the good people will have a gun. So when the bad people come, they can have a shootout, and the good people will win, because at the end of the day, there are more good people. I don't think a classroom is a particularly good place to have a gunfight. I really don't want to see a teacher in the front of the room drop his or her eraser and chalk and pull out a gun and start firing at a person who walks into the back of the classroom with a gun. It's almost comedic if it wasn't so tragic. I think the answer is fewer guns, and people who are mentally ill should not have a gun, and people who have committed felonies should not have a gun. It's that simple. No one's saying, look, we passed the SAFE Act. Everybody said, oh, this is the slippery slope. They're going to come and take my gun the next day. It's been 6 years. There was no slippery slope. Those are the rules. If you're mentally ill, you shouldn't have a gun. If you have a history of criminal convictions, felonies, you shouldn't have a gun.
Now,
those are inarguable.
Well, I think it's arguable that if a guy's coming in with a gun, I'm not for it. I agree with you. But if a guy's coming in with a gun and threatens to, and not threatens, but starts shooting at kids, there's at least a remedy.
Yeah. The remedy is called having school safety officers, trained professionals with a gun, and that's their job, and that's what they do, not the math teacher who is also carrying a gun. I mean, it's absurd.
All right.
To me.
All right, back to you. There's a bill on your desk, I believe, that unlinks teacher evaluations from student test scores. Have you evolved in terms of your views on this one?
I think we have to do more work on the evaluation mechanism and the testing mechanism. What has become clear to me is from practical knowledge. You know, you can have the conceptual plan and then the plan in reality. And conceptually, I understand it and it makes sense. Practically, in reality, it doesn't work that way. The testing regimen collapsed. You had all sorts of parents all across the state taking their child out of testing. They felt there were too many tests, too much pressure on the student. So it does not work as a metric. Conceptually, you can see where it would work, but we're not at the point where it works.
The CEO of Starbucks wants to run, he's saying, as a quote, independent Democrat, somebody in the middle, as a third-party candidate. You want to make some news here and tell him to stay out?
Well, I drink Dunkin' Donuts, but I don't know that would relate to any political opinion. I think you have a lot of people, I think Trump sort of, the Trump candidacy said, well, anyone can be president. You don't really have to know what you're doing. You know, if you have money or if you have celebrity, that is now the equivalent with government qualifications and expertise and experience. I think people tend to look at government and are so disgusted with it that come to the conclusion, albeit a bad one, that you don't really need to know what you're doing to run government. Sort of the old conservative philosophy. The less you know, the better, because what we want you to do is deconstruct it in the first place, right? I think it's sad. You actually do need to know what you're talking about to be a good governmental leader. These are complex, large organizations with different dynamics. It is not intuitive. Managing hundreds of thousands of people is not intuitive. And it's the only place in society, when you think about it, where we believe there is no prior experience necessary, no test, no professional license. You can't drive a large truck without a test and a license. You can't fly an airplane. You can't sell real estate. You can't cut hair in this state without passing a test, but you can be governor or you can be president. Yeah, well, then don't be shocked when you have these executives who had no prior experience who fail Because it was your selection criteria.
Well, who draws up the test? But forget about that. New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg is always, to use a term you're familiar with, Hamletizing about running for president. He was the mayor of the largest city in the country, Bloomberg News and everything else. He'd be a good candidate, wouldn't he?
He, I think, would be an interesting candidate. You're right. He brings the private sector expertise that the Republicans found attractive in Trump, right? Trump had no government experience, but that's okay because government is bad. But he was a private sector success, they believed, which means he knows how to run a business. And if you can run a business, you can run anything, is the Republican conservative thinking. But he has credibility of being a businessman, and he ran the city of New York.
So
he will then turn to his positions and policies, which is where, depending on what they are, but if they are what they were when he was mayor of New York, and is he going to run as a Democrat or an independent, I think that becomes tricky. But he's a credible fellow, no doubt.
Let's go to New York City, where Mayor de Blasio would like to run for president, we hear, according to the New York Times. Will you be endorsing him?
I'm sorry, Doctor, I missed your last question. Do you have the chutzpah to restate it?
Yeah, sure. You know, the New York Times says Bill de Blasio might run for president, and I'm wondering whether you're prepared to endorse him, fellow New Yorker.
I'm not prepared to make any endorsements. Fellow New Yorker, Senator Gillibrand's also running.
That's true.
But he hasn't announced. If and when he announces, I'll have a comment at that time. But I think you're at a stage now where a lot of people are announcing for one reason or another. And if they want to run, then they should get out there and say they want to run. And let's turn on the lights and have a conversation. But I think there are going to be other people entering the race. And I want to hold my opinion until we know what all the options are.
Okay. So I have just a minute more. Roger Stone. Question mark.
Yes.
Well, you know, the fall of Roger Stone. I'm asking you to do some commentary on what you see happening. Is this a building block in a case against the president?
I think it's a very bad signal for the president. I think between Cohen and Stone, these are two people who were involved in all sorts of dealings with the presidents. With the president, I know Cohen originally said, well, I'm loyal to the president. It's amazing, and I remember this as attorney general and as a prosecutor, how quickly people wind up saying all sorts of things. So I think it's a very bad sign for the president because he knows if he's relying on a Stone and a Cohen, to keep their mouth shut, I wouldn't sleep all that well. I also think the president has been wholly discredited through this shutdown. He was supposed to be the businessman, negotiator, the art of the deal, tough guy, table pounder. And then Nancy Pelosi came in and knocked him on his tuchus, we would say in Italian. And it's irrefutable. Knocked them down, 10 count. The man didn't even try to get up. And that now means he's responsible for this whole debacle of a shutdown because it was his recalcitrance, which he then flipped on. So he was the reason there was a shutdown. And now I'm going to say he is accountable for the damages to this state caused by the federal shutdown. Tens of millions of dollars, loss of tourism, delays at airports, loss of federal aid. We lost hundreds of millions that should have been coming to this state during the shutdown that we had to make up for. We had to pay to keep the Statue of Liberty in Ellis Island open. So he politically lost all credibility. He's to blame for the shutdown. He can't possibly shut it down again. And he's also getting hit by his base, which believed he caved. So I think between the investigation side and the shutdown politics side, Nancy Pelosi is the reigning champion of Washington, and there can be no debating that.
Well, Governor Cuomo, we are incredibly grateful that you have given us this time, as we always are. I want to say that that last question is a good example of one I should have asked, but that you asked instead, and I'm very grateful for you for that. Appreciate it.
Thank you, doctor.
And thank you, sir. I have to go operate now.
Anesthesia is a kindness.